welcome to Trent, by the way, from Holium. They just did an announcement. If people want to take a look at that, literally like 5 minutes ago. So, Trent, what's the account? The Twitter account?
Yes. The Twitter account is Meme Deck App, at Meme Deck App.
At Meme Deck App. Yeah. So you guys just did an announcement there.
Yeah, we just did an announcement. Meme Deck's this new AI-powered meme platform that we're building alongside some of the Keynote functionality. So we can talk a little bit about that in terms of like how we're leveraging Keynote and, you know, what we're building in terms of like some core tech behind it, because, you know, it's not just that we're building like this meme app. There's actually going to be this decentralized AI sort of like back-end system that we're building as well. Because one thing is that as you have, like say for example, for a small number of users, we can have, you know, one massive GPU instance that we're running, but then like as you start compounding user growth, you're gonna run into scaling problems there. And the question was how can we leverage the latent compute that's floating around crypto space and have people effectively contribute their GPUs to, you know, powering some of the backend AI tasks that we have. So like right now it's a lot of like running our meme template model and also getting like the captioning and making sure the captioning is relevant to memes and not just like some generic garbage. So like there's like several things behind the scenes that are going on, but we're kind of using Meme Deck as a vector to build real world use cases for like decentralized AI. And it's just kind of a fun way to do it is by like just using it for memes. And so obviously there's other pieces of functionality that we're working on as well. So it's not just going to be something to go search and upload your memes to. We're actually building a meme diffusion model is what we're calling it. And it's just going to be a totally new era for memes. And so to power this, you know, there's like definitely reasons why the centralized strategy could be problematic. One of them could be the fact that, oh, you're generating, you know, super based memes. So obviously we've got like, there's like one place where you can potentially be shut down. And so we obviously have to build against for that potential. And I think that's where it's also sort of like, you know, maps to a lot of the crypto ethos in terms of like having it be sort of decentralized, have it be non-cancelable and things like that. So really, I think there's going to be a lot more of this kind of a lot more systems like this that are going to be built as AI takes off, where you're kind of not, you don't want to be like limited by Google's very restricted AI generation and stuff like that. And so I see there's like going to be almost this atrophying of the centralized orgs, and perhaps that's where the decentralized AI unlocks like this new era of flourishing and creativity. That's kind of the way I see it. But yeah, that's kind of what we want to facilitate, but we know that we need to have a path to make it, you know, censorship proof, to make it useful for users. And then as well, like, you know, we could probably get into this at some point, but I know that there's probably a set of questions and stuff, but really the question is like, you know, what does it mean to be decentralized user, or why do people want to be decentralized? That's sort of a key question we asked at the beginning of all of this, but maybe that's a good place to start, I guess, the discussion with Bazil.
Yeah, so right off the bat, this has been kind of a thing of mine for a long time, and I know you strongly agree. Like, people don't care about decentralization and privacy because of sort of moral values in the large. There's like some small group that does, but as a target market, that group of neckbeards is like basically saturated and has been for some time, and mostly has what they want, minus network effects. Of course, they would prefer if there were network effects and everyone, you know, had PGP keys that they were you know, that they were throwing around to everyone. But there is an aspect of, but I think that sort of leads people to go too far the other way, where they'll then be like, oh, you naive decentralization people. Like, of course everyone just wants to like blast their thing through X centralized service. And there's like a lot of evidence that that's also not the case. Like you have, again, in crypto, if you wanted to just blast through transactions, the maximum possible rate, you would do it on like Solana, not on like, you know, layer one Ethereum, although layer twos are changing that. But, you know, let's take even a year or two ago.
Not even Solana, Binance, smart chain.
You would do it, you would blast it through Binance. And like, and the interesting thing is, people don't do that in terms of TVL. There is much more about like value, like empirically locked in Ethereum of all kinds, both the native asset, but especially like, you know, assets on top, like stable coins, other tokens, what have you. And in addition, and so first of all, there clearly is something in that decentralized and neutral setup that people like, which is some degree of safety. Like it's essentially like the same reason that, you know, Switzerland had a good, you know, a good thing going in banks before they were, you know, too centralized and ultimately forced to give that up. So ETH is producing something with decentralization that people actually want, which is you can store and transfer buttloads of money on it. People like that. That's very different from like, yeah, you need to like, you know, use my keys when you like, you know, email me because I want to like, you know, be safe or something like that. Right. And then secondly, there's another thing, which is that starting from, you know, DeFi summer and moving on, all of that ETH stuff, and this is true on other chains as well, has been extended like drastically. And there's a lot of extensions that involve things the original creators didn't intend, that people could build on, and a lot of value that's been unlocked, both in basic ways, like, okay, building a token on ETH, but then like all of the interlocked protocols for liquidity and loaning and stuff like that. And that's what I would get at is I think that decentralization is inherently much, much, much better at a certain type of extensibility. And you can think of it as like plugins. And so centralization is really good for things like search, global namespaces, global data sets. So in order for Twitter to provide like, you know, the ability to just get stuff to your timeline quickly across a lot of users at scale, it's probably better for that to be centralized. Now you could do alternate designs where Twitter didn't have to be the operator of that or have an exclusive on that, but you know, it's useful. But for things like extensibility, that's actually very, very hard for Twitter to both engineer in the first place and then to not just like maintain a commitment to, you know, doing through APIs, but they just have to maintain it. And it's a lot harder to extend it. So, and I think actually going to a smaller scale, I think when we look at even Holium, Holium can deliver useful centralized services that enable searching over Meme Deck and enable like discovery over the whole space. But it's actually like a pretty significant and annoying engineering and maintenance problem to deliver extensibility. The fact that you guys could deliver that service doesn't make it easy for you to write a system that lets other people write plugins for it. You also would have to maintain that going forward. And that's even before, we don't even have to get into like rugging issues of could you guys shut it down or something, which are a factor in these things. But the main one is just from an engineering perspective, there's much better economies of scale if you can have a more, you know, decentralized or I guess optionally centralized open system that can be built on. And that's like, and I think like, if we want to get into the topic of what parts of a network fit into or should be centralized or decentralized, that's an interesting thing. But essentially we live in this network world where centralization and decentralization are not the useful categories. What you want to think more about is what types of resources are you trying to coordinate and what types of services are you trying to offer and what is the best way to deliver that thing? And the answer is very rarely like all of one or the other, but it's also not like a spectrum necessarily where you take a service. Like, I guess if I want to bang on Solana more, I would say Solana sort of gets the idea of spectrum wrong, where they're like, oh, decentralization is a spectrum, so we'll have our consensus chain sort of be partially you know, really fast, but sort of shut down a lot. People don't want to store tons of money on it, partially centralized. I think that's not what you want. I think you want like a modular thing where some mm-hmm. components are extremely decentralized, some are very centralized, and then you also have some that are more subject to things like exit, like, you know, hosted nodes and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's from like all of our experience in the past and building, you know, decentralized stuff. That's sort of where we got to, because every time you started to think about, well, how do we introduce certain feature sets that, you know, everyone really wants, which is like, you know, a more of like a global search and stuff like that. You're starting to kind of build these systems centralized. So, you know, with a lot of stuff we were doing back with Realm, we would start building it a centralized, like fully decentralized. Like we kind of mm-hmm. went all the way to the decentralized side, and we're like, okay, we're gonna only build it with this like mode of thinking, to see how, like, you know, how far we could push it. And obviously, there are reasons why things get centralized, like you were saying earlier. And I think the thing that, you know, has been cool to play around with Keynote as we've been building is just that because it's, you know, Rust based system, and you know, all of our backend is written in Rust for the centralized. You know, as well as the Keynote logic, you can sort of like share code between the two projects, even though there's like, you know, some design differences in terms of like how you build for Keynote versus how you build like for the centralized system. I think mm-hmm. it's just been easy for us so far to just, yeah, take our, you know, API code that we wrote for the centralized services and just have them, you know, port over to Keynote. And I think that really, as we've kind of gone through this, we're sort of coming to, like, this is at least the future that I would want to facilitate with some of the stuff we're building behind the scenes with Meme Deck, is that you have this world where instead of having, you know, decentralized alternatives to applications, you actually just make it really, really easy to support decentralized users in mm-hmm. like a currently centralized application. Or even like for some crypto apps that have like, you know, a semi, like, you know, some dApps that need some centralized services and things like that, because there's always something that's needed. And so it's like having it be very easy to integrate, and just like almost from like a developer experience perspective, it's like adding middleware to your auth or something. To me, that's the ultimate solution here. And I think that's the way decentralization actually plays out, is that there's going to be a pressure over time as people realize there's value in them having the data from all these different services and having them live all in your Keynote, and have, you know, this easy thing that you can attach to a current product to support, you know, decentralized users. I think that to me is the model of how things go decentralized.
So I agree. I want to get a little bit more precise on the terminology, because I think that when if we say, you know, enable decentralized users, it kind of creates the feeling of like, okay, you have one class of like practical users, and then one class of maybe, you know, morally committed or privacy centric users or whatever. And I think it's actually very, very different. What we're trying to do in Keynote is enable integrations across all pieces of the current network universe. So the pieces are, you know, arbitrary centralized services, which are usually acting as search things or oracles. You can think of, you know, Twitter as an oracle for what was able to be posted on Twitter. You can think of it as a search space. You can also think of things like Google Auth and Twitter Auth as oracles for, you know, identity in their system. And those are centralized services that are either, you know, oracles or search spaces. Then you have all these other types of things you might want to integrate, like very robust consensus, either at like, you know, the L1 or the L2 layer, where you're tying in financial grade infrastructure to your application. Then you have, you know, user-owned data, which, you know, that's actually like an interesting one that sometimes is centralized just because of current design patterns, you know, where a lot of your stuff is in Google Drive, but where if stuff was better engineered, would probably be more on something that looks like hosted peer-to-peer nodes, or individually run peer-to-peer nodes, because there still are a lot of people who like to own the data for backup purposes, non-rugging purposes, you know, what have you. And so I think it's less that we want to, you know, have a centralized service that supports some decentralized users plugged into it, although that is like a thing. And it's more that we're trying to enable people to decompose problems properly. Okay. And what I get most annoyed about is improper decomposition of problems. So that means that if something in the system is logically a centralized oracle, it should be decomposed from the rest of the system, run really well as a centralized oracle, but be able to be integrated easily. If something is on that hybrid of a lot of people will want to own it themselves for a variety of reasons, like non-rugging, a certain type of extensibility, whatever. They can do that on their own nodes, but also users who are just checking out the system or who don't have long-term technical maintenance capabilities can run as a hosted node, right? That's another sort of decomposition that has even different dimensions. And then definitely, I think in the blockchain world in particular, there's been a lot of improper decomposition because stuff has just been easier to do if it's all on one chain. And so what you really want is to decompose, okay, where's the super heavy duty financial grade infrastructure on like ETH-L1? What is a maybe liquidity centric, you know, but not super high TPS L2? And then maybe even what makes sense as a ZK rollup with a Validium, which has a lot less bandwidth than just an app on your computer, but it has a lot more bandwidth than like Arbitrum or Solana or something like that. And so in all cases, what we're trying to do, and it's really hard, we've made more progress. The progress has been better than I thought it would be because like Doria and Goldfinger and others on here have been killing it. But like it, what we're trying to do is enable integration so that you can decompose properly. And what you're talking about is a very specific then instantiation of a decomposed social media problem where you're trying to get it into, okay, what's the onboarding service for new users? Which parts need to be centralized for UX? Which parts can support decentralized or hosted users? How do we do extensibility with apps? Where do those run? They probably run on a combination, again, of hosted nodes and local ones. Some part of the apps can be rolled into an Oracle, stuff like that. So we want to, if we start thinking about everything as, here are all the primitives we have, how do we decompose the problem and then integrate them? I think it's just, it makes things a lot easier to talk about than talking about, you know, degrees of decentralization or whatever, stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess I was getting at more so like, you know, from our perspective and specifically with Meme Deck, you know, everything we build is always driven by product experience. And really one thing that you sort of learn is, yeah, I think it's just like people try to build with a certain, with like a certain ethos, but then you're sort of forced to make these concessions. And I think what you're saying is that you're, the keynote is trying to give you all of the pieces of the puzzle to assemble them for whatever your use case
so needs, that you right? define so, the problem properly yeah. at the start rather than starting with just like I want to decentralize everything or screw that I'm back yeah. to all centralized services. We're trying to give you tools to think about problems clearly.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Which you're doing. And like I agree with everything you're saying. I'm actually just trying to like, you know, riff off what you're doing and maybe say what I see is happening, but you're very sure. much in the trenches making this happen, and so that's, you know, where terminology gets developed.
Yeah, and I think that you know, the one thing that I see, you know, over time is there's a value proposition in terms of like having all of this data on your, you know, decentralized node or your keynote that really is like, it's not a selling point at the beginning of the journey of like people adopting, you know, keynote support and stuff. But over time, as you know, you upload memes to your library using a keynote account, you're going to just be building that, you know, that it's stored in the file system of Keynote, like all the memes you upload, all of the metadata, all of the AI, you know, tagging and AI sort of recognition for the memes, that's all going to live on your Keynote. And so I think once there's like more apps that are built and more data that's going on to the system, now you have some interesting unlocks where you've got data to build on in different ways. Where you wouldn't be able to build on it before. And so I think the key bit here is that the way that, you know, at least for us, we see that like that path unlocking is by services that are targeting like this larger TAM than just like, you know, decentralized users
or something.
And then what you're actually doing is you're unlocking like, there's like, it's better for everyone because from the decentralized user perspective, you can leverage these like really robust, you know, AI services on the back end to get your meme stacked and everything. But for the developer that's building on top of, you know, your meme library in the future, you know, they're able to tap into all of that value. Because really, I think as we move down like the AI future that we're going down currently with tech, I think having all of your data in one spot that's really clean and really well organized is going to be a massive unlock for like a new type of application. I kind of think about it in terms of like building your own personal knowledge graph that you could then feed into an LLM in the future. But, you know, obviously with our case, it's just memes, but we'll be, you know, working on expanding the scope of what we're hitting as we try to build out other solutions. But yeah, I guess, what do you see in terms of like, I guess if you were to like give a few examples of ways to assemble the primitives, like I think we were talking the other day about, you effectively have services that are like, you know, something like Google Drive, right? Mm-hmm. And Google Drive would be a service that if, you know, there's like a Keynote Drive app, I think you guys have a Files app, but yeah. If that gets, you know, fleshed out a bit more, I could see that being a total replacement for anything where you're just storing data online. So the Dropbox
So Google Drive doesn't have the usual moats that would keep you in a centralized service. It's basically, I think I would like differentiate centralized service lock-in and moats by whether there's something kind of inherent about it or whether it's like an engineering problem that was, you know, solved in that way. And I think Google Drive, it isn't really leveraging Google's network effects. Like, sure, you can like... Yeah. You know, maybe share some stuff a bit, but mostly people just use it for storage. Honestly, the same thing goes for Google Sheets and like Google Docs. It's mostly just people doing stuff than collaborating with people. Yeah, they get to use Google's identity network, but that's like, you know, by far the easiest part of that to replace. And isn't like a true network effect. It's more of just all lock-in. I don't want to go into taxonomies here, but those are pretty different. And so those things are more, if something is like, quote unquote, just an engineering problem, you can do engineering and get around it. And the engineering required usually involves having a good story for hosted nodes, having a good story for exit, having a good story for, you know, restoring from backups and using like, you know, large like object storage. And once you get those pieces in place, you have enough of a platform to build on that you can, you know, start replacing things like Google Drive. There's other stuff that like, you know, that Google does, like, you know, Google search is extremely hard to decentralize for very fundamental reasons. Mm-hmm. So I think, but the other one that in social media and traditionally centralized services that I think is really, really ripe for attack, I would put it under everything that like Twitter and Facebook rugged when they took out their open APIs like 15-ish mm-hmm. years ago. All of that stuff is like, operations over your personal data or your personal social graph that they were mostly unlocking. And that's all very tractable information to store at the user level, whether hosted or not. And when I, from here on out, when I say personal node, you should just assume that I mean either hosted or, you know, on your own with the option to exit, because it gets tiring to, you know, give that all the time. So that's all stuff that like is very, very, very tractable to host on a personal node and run operations over. And that stuff is like a really good target for outside developers to hit, where you're like, where it's actually like a little bit hard for a centralized service to build a plugin platform. Because now I think the centralization works against them, because there's always going to be the pressure to make something idiosyncratic in your plugin system, rather than having like a generic process-based system like we have. And that's where I think the open system actually starts to benefit a lot from standards, economies of scale, meaning that you can make small changes in the code base that affect a ton of users and improve things. And so those are like two really big, you know, targets for it, like things that involve a lot of storage that's user based, and also things where you don't once the centralized service has connected you with people, it's kind of done its job. And then you have your graph and data and other stuff. And you actually would strongly prefer to have an open application platform target that developers can hit. Meaning that it's actually, I think the sort of the open version there is more adaptive in an evolutionary sense and probably has a better chance to win. Dory, I'm kind of curious on your thoughts on all this because you've built a lot of the infra that we're kind of hypothesizing here, and whether you have anything you would add to this.
I mean, the main thing that I've been wanting to say is that, you know, when you're working with like a developer that's building an application, it's really like unattractive to them if you offer like one size fits all solutions. Like going back to what you mentioned earlier about like, you know, there's certain kinds of user data that actually like kind of makes sense to put in a centralized place, because you can do more stuff with it. Like if you're like a really serious like social media application developer, like first of all, like you know what actually matters for the success of your, you know, your project, and that's, you know user onboarding, user growth, like growth hacking, like retention, like there's very like sort of meat and potatoes, like entrepreneurial things to be done, and letting like decentralization engineering get in the way of that is like poisonous. So you're going to want to do some centralized stuff. You're going to want to do like friends of friends calculations. You're going to want to like have certain algorithms that are running for suggestions to make your app more engaging. And you know, telling those developers that they can't do that is like a non-starter, right? So you have like parts of the data of your application, like the data model of your application, parts of it you're going to want to keep on your company's server for a while. Maybe not all the time, maybe not forever, but for a while. And then you've got other parts which make sense to go straight to the user, right? And the only reason that Web 2 applications don't do that is because of the engineering of it, because that's hard. So what we've been trying to do is like don't like force developers to like use a specific application model that tells them how their application needs to look, right? Like the whole job of like a developer, especially now that like writing code is like kind of secondary because you can just tell a machine what you want your code to look like and they generate it for you. And that's only going to get more, you know, more so the case. The entire job is just architecture. Yeah, like literally. And if you take architecture away from a developer, like you're telling them that they shouldn't exist, which I'm not quite ready to say. So you should let people architect their own data models, basically. You know, be flexible. And our design is attempting to do that.
Could we? Yeah. I think one thing we should do more on this space is like, could you get a little bit more concrete, Trent, about like the architecture you guys have, what you built, what people are going to see? Because I think we've got a little bit into the philosophical weeds, which is mostly my
fault. Yeah. No, it's fine. It's fine. Yeah. No, I was thinking that's a good direction to go in. So really the way that, just to speak to, you know, what Ben was saying there, what Moth was saying, is we essentially, you know, started with some R&D with the Keynote guys. And I think what we, you know, we were just discovering as we were building is that, okay, we're going to need ways to sort of build these more centralized services. We refer to them sort of as like, you know, providers, quote unquote, or just like a provider of a service of some kind. And I think, you know, the sort of thing that we realized was that, you know, sometimes you need that service to just be either a centralized service or a certain set of functionality for Meme Deck, like search, discovery, seeing a feed of like, you know, popular memes that have been shared, stuff like that is just something that's, you know, there's just no alternative for decentralization that makes sense. And so that's, we went to the centralized, you know, service for that piece. And so the way it works is that, you know, your library, your meme library, your profile, you know, any meme that you've saved when you're like viewing, a feed or you're viewing, search results and things like that, anything you save from that gets stored and copied onto your Keynote. If you're a Keynote user, if you're a centralized user, It just is stored in the centralized database, and that's just so that people could drop in, you know, log in with Twitter, and they don't have to like think about getting a keynote set up. They don't have to think about that. They could just try the service, and then at a later point they can decide, okay, I like this. I actually want to build my meme knowledge base or my meme data set on here, or upload my library. Therefore, I'm gonna, you know, move to the Keynote and boot a Keynote account so that I can do that and retain all that information forever. In case, you know, if in like, you know, 10 years, the centralized service were to spin down for whatever reason, you know, you can take that and you can have that. So there's like a value proposition for the decentralized users for that, but also, you know, it brings all of this composability things you can do in the future with your meme library. So that's effectively the feature set that's isolated to Keynote, which is persisting all of that in your Keynote file system, as well as all the metadata with that. And so really what we end up doing is we're using Keynote's identity system to reverse proxy search and a few other capabilities that's the centralized services capability. Through the Keynote, it authenticates based on that identity. And then it allows you to search and get results and do all those things. So really, the goal for having a Keynote user and a centralized user is that the experience really isn't different. It's just it services a different user demand, I suppose. And I think that in a lot of cases, you're going to have this split, especially if you're building something that has overlap with crypto or anything that goes on chain. You're always going to have this sort of like, you know, mix that you need to figure out what your app needs to be architected to support. So, you know, that's kind of how we broke up our app specifically for Meme Deck. And there's already, like, just to talk through some of the struggles with the centralized side of things, is like anytime in today's world when you go to like try to get a GPU instance on one of these cloud platforms, it's usually like I had to spend a few days going through support to get verified that I can, you know, use the GPU node. I had to like write out a massive like description as to what we're using it for and get approval just to use a GPU instance on, in this case, you know, Azure or even on Google. There's sort of a similar process. So I think it's like, it's just a pain sometimes to work with some of these cloud systems because they're kind of janky, even though they're sort of widely used. And so that sort of got us thinking about another application, and we kind of teased it earlier, of like this provider backend model that we want to build, that we're actually building, you know, right now, which is, okay, we have this GPU in the cloud, but as we scale, instead of us providing all of the, you know, GPU, all of the sort of compute for that, what instead we would do is that we would open it up to allow third parties to contribute their compute too. So it's like, you can imagine, you know, we were talking about this the other day. It's like, imagine pump.fun, but instead of like shit coins, meme coins, they're just like applications that you can like download the repository for, spin it up, and then register on chain as a provider. And then effectively you're now executing jobs for like generating memes or classifying image uploads. And you're getting rewarded for that in some either app specific token or in specific, like, you know, splits of fees that are, you know, captured for each of those tasks. So maybe, you know, if you generate 30 images or 30 memes, like 30 Pepe memes or something, you would spend a certain amount of credits and that would be captured by the provider that executed the job for that user, right? So there's like a model here for building decentralized infrastructure that we're really working to explore. And I think that is sort of some of the more exciting things that are happening behind the scenes with what we're building, is that I think a lot of people can build really cool solutions that work, but they might build a cool product, but they don't want to like have to manage the infrastructure and scale of it forever. Right. And I think there's a lot of these sorts of things that get built in crypto where they're almost like there's this post from the Zora guy from way back called Hyperstructures, where it's like talking about protocols as like this sort of basic utility where you let anyone, you know, contribute to this, whatever the protocol needs. And in this case, it would be like, okay, we need GPUs so we can do, you know, run these, you know, customized diffusion models to generate memes. But you could see this working in all different compute like use cases, especially with decentralized AI. So I really see, like, in a kind of fun way, Meme Deck is actually going to facilitate a lot of decentralized AI infrastructure. And it's just a fun way to do that, because instead of just starting with, you know, our like infrastructure for the sake of infrastructure, we're actually applying it in a way that's real and useful and fun, right? I mean, generating memes using prompts that are like custom tailored, it's like once we unlock that feature, I think people are going to be generating some crazy shit. So it's a fun way to do that, but there is definitely a bigger picture behind the scenes to what we're trying to pull off. And yeah, it's been great to work with the Keynote guys so far, because yeah, I feel like, what was it? We ported some of our code from like our old Rust system that we had as like a sidecar for a lot of the urban apps we had built. We ported the code to Keynote, and like, I think it took me an hour or two, because it was just like, we already had it written in Rust. We just put it into the Keynote architecture and it all just kind of worked. So that was a nice test that when we originally were, you know, exploring the Keynote use case. But as we've worked with the guys, it's just been good to have that practical perspective applied to everything. And really, like what you were saying earlier, Bazil, the idea to have all of these primitives to pull from and kind of do it in a way that allows the app to take what is needed rather than, you know, trying to force, you know, this larger social decentralized app into like a fully decentralized context. So I think that like the pragmatic way in which you guys are going about it, to me, is like really has been really, really good to see.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that, you know, trying to meet people where they're at for sure.
Yeah, I think also the specific use case has like pushed us a lot to flesh out stuff that we knew we wanted to do earlier than we would have been able to in terms of having the business reason to do it. I'm seeing like there's like a fair amount of people on the call today, probably interested by the crossover. So we might be a good time to open stuff up to questions about the thing in general, if anyone has them.
Yeah, go ahead and raise your hand or request if you have any questions.
Otherwise, we can just riff on the provider model and talk a little bit more about the practicals of that, I guess.
Yeah. Let me start with like that one, because I have. We'll get into the practicals, but that one is like sort of an obvious one in peer-to-peer type systems. The idea of provider model basically is the idea that you have some services in your peer-to-peer system that are really resource intensive or hard to configure. Let's say like running, you know, some GPU setup or, you know, a full node for Bitcoin, Ethereum, something like, you know, something that just takes a fair amount of resources, more than someone has on their laptop or than they configure. And so you want to let some peers in the system run that and then expose it to other peers as a subscription service, on a friend basis, on a community basis, whatever. And it, again, it's a pretty obvious pattern. So I think back even in summer of 2020, when I was working on the Bitcoin program for Urbit, you know, Josh Lehman and I came up with that pretty early, and we're like, okay, this is, you know, probably how you want to do this. And even when the Bitcoin node then rolled out in early 2021, it sort of included that model and had the programming done to do it. I think the thing that we all underestimated is that it's non-trivial. It's essentially you're creating an internal API in your thing, and like keeping that stable in terms of the like how you communicate over that API internally turns out to be hard. And if stuff like if there's versioning things or systems break, that kind of wrecks the setup.
Yeah, it's certainly hard when APIs are fragile, brittle.
Yeah, exactly. And APIs are fragile and brittle. And I think that was, well, so I think that is the other inherently hard thing about it. If you're talking about something that's getting configured by end users at the endpoints, is that the APIs are, you cannot just guarantee uptime. And for centralized services, you can maybe simulate that a little bit, although sometimes those do break or change their versions too. Usually not. People try to keep them more stable. And but you still have to have error handling conditions for them being down. And that's even, you know, maybe more true in this context. So I think the thing that everyone underestimated in this is that the engineering is substantial, and people keep rediscovering the provider model, or not even rediscovering it, just knowing about it and then wanting to implement aspects of it, and keep running into that. And so I think the interesting thing that we have going here with Holium now is that they need this. They need to be able to provide these kind of services. And that's, it's not an insoluble problem. It's just like a sort of very, you have to approach it both as an engineering problem and also as a very serious one that you have to put a lot of work in to get robust. You can't just sort of like roll it out and expect it to work. You have to treat it with appropriate respect. And I think we're kind of getting into that now because of the urgency of their use case, where we're like, okay, how do we actually deliver this? But I want to emphasize that what I'm trying to emphasize is that if you work at all in anything like peer-to-peer systems, you will independently rediscover the need for this kind of pattern instantly. And less instantly, you will discover that it's a substantial engineering problem that is harder than you think it is at the start. This is just empirically true at this point. So I guess like that might be a place for, you know, Trent to talk a little bit about where, how that's gone for you guys, like what you would have been like, you know, the hardest parts, where you think it's going next, you know, how you're working with our team on it.
Yeah, I mean, to go into that a bit more, I could probably just go through, like, we've kind of riffed on this back and forth, like some of the guys on the team, definitely we've worked with, you know, Ben and some of the other guys, in terms of just trying to lock down how we're going to build the system, and specifically this, you know, provider model backend, because like, yeah, it's definitely something you'll always discover and uncover. And I think what we're hoping to unlock with applying it to this real world use case is that, you know, right now, you know, there's two paths for us to go down. One of them is I can go and sit on, you know, Azure support calls and argue as to why we need more, you know, GPU instances to scale up. Or, you know, we can develop a protocol that's specific to powering our backend. And I think, you know, I think that doing it in a specific way to start makes sense, because what you're getting is you're getting the real world application of like the full system in action, and then you generalize it, versus like, let's build this generalized thing and hope that it works for this use, these like future use cases that aren't there yet. This is like, here's the real use case. The use case is going to be like, you know, decentralized AI use case effectively. And so by applying it to this real task or this real use case, I think it's just going to end up like speed running, you know, because I think a lot of things that happen around, you know, crypto projects sometimes is that they build out all of this sort of like capability in the protocol. And then they just kind of are like, okay, now let's wait for people to build some stuff on top of it. But in this case, I think we're going to get like the full use case and unlock the generalized version, you know, right after.
Yeah, I strongly agree with that. Yeah.
And I guess from your guys' perspective, like, I guess how do you, because you're always building, like I always see in the Discord, you guys are always building apps to test things out and doing these fast iterative things to see like, oh, can we do, you know, this, you know, DAO voting system, or can we do a ZK computation using Keynote? And so I guess you guys are just continually trying to apply these things. But I guess from your perspective, you know, how do you kind of, I guess this is a question for you guys more so. It's like, how do you guys balance this sort of like building features versus the applied testing of them in sort of like the Keynote design or development process?
Hang on a second, we lost Dorio there. I think he's dead.
I'm back now. I fat fingered the leave button. I heard your question though, Trent, and I like that question because it's like, it's really important to us. Like, one of the best pieces of advice I got from like tech blogs was the phrase "build another app." So Bazil, I think Bazil maybe sent this to me or somebody else, but it's summed up in that build another app. If you're building like a tool or a piece of infrastructure or a protocol, and you have exactly one use case that you're testing it with, like you are going to overfit the underlying infrastructure to that use case. This is like a guaranteed thing. It always happens. And so you have to build at least another app, preferably a dozen more to make sure that the thing that you're trying to make general is actually general.
Yeah, that's it's interesting because like from our, you know, what we were trying to build with Realm on, you know, back when we were doing the Urbit stuff was we effectively were trying to build these 10 apps on top of our like general system, right? Like we built this, you know, general bedrock database layer for Urbit. And we just started building a bunch of apps on top of it to test that generalized piece of infrastructure. But it's like, I think that's really the only way you can achieve this sort of like a valuable development ecosystem is by having that real world, like testing things, because it's like, as soon as things see the light, it's like, if they're not useful, then they get abandoned. Like as soon as they're used in the real world, if they don't solve the problems that you need them to solve, and you have to work around them so much, then you sort of get to the point where you're like, well, then why am I leveraging this system at all? And I think that, like, Bill, I guess what I've seen with you guys is it's built into your development flow, where you're just like constantly testing things with real world applications to make sure it does the things that that developers want them to do. But then it's also the ergonomics of the system. So, you know, working on making sure things are ergonomic when you get through, you know, the development of the infrastructure. Because that's the other piece is like, you can have a system that's useful, but if it's like a pain in the ass to implement on, then it sort of is kind of a lot less.
It doesn't actually exist. Like, in fact, like the kind of bull case for something that's unergonomic to implement, but does work is that some developer will come in at some point and build a library or system to make it ergonomic. But like you're waiting for that, and until that happens, which very rarely does, you're kind of stuck. In fact, I think a lot of what people think of as centralized services is actually just ergonomic engineering combined with economies of scale. So to make that concrete, if you look at like, I think people think cloud service providers as opposed to like, you know, renting machines in the cloud or VPSs with bare metal. People think there's like something inherent about that or something inherently competitive. And I think it's like, you know, in the same way that, and then they kind of falsely equate it with like, you know, the network effect advantages that social services have, which are very, very different. And more often what these are is they're centralized because it made sense for some company to, you know, could afford to do all of the ergonomic engineering to make it, you know, to make it work. And then they actually had a vision for, okay, what does this look like as a complete system that's reasonable for people to use? They don't always nail it. There's actually using cloud service is actually pretty annoying in a lot of cases, but you know, they're better than, you know, what the alternatives were in 2007, by a lot. And so I think what you really have is they could afford to do it, which is the kind of economies of scale part. And then they had a clear vision for the ergonomics that goes beyond like, you know, renting bare metal in the cloud, essentially like Hetzner or something. And if you start to chip away at that and you actually really focus on building apps, getting your ergonomics right for these kind of use cases that integrate things that maybe are hard to integrate in a cloud, you can absolutely compete with them. And it's a very, very different story from how you would like the difficulties in competing with, let's say, a social network and its network effects. And so I think people tend to just bunch all of these things up into big tech centralization, and there must be some advantage, and they're actually somewhat different. So yeah, ergonomics like pretty much rules everything. If your system is Turing complete, but not ergonomically complete, like nothing will get built on it.
gentlemen, we're coming up to the time. Anybody have anything else they want to say or forever hold your peace? If anybody wants to ask questions, go ahead and raise your hand now. This is the moment to do it. Otherwise, I'll ask Trent, do you want to shill your links for us for Meme Deck?
Yes. Let me. How do you paste them into Twitter Spaces? I've actually never pasted links. You just like add replies, and then that's gets. I guess
you can just say it, and I'll add it to your reply later.
Okay. Yeah. No. So yeah, follow Meme Deck app. Memedeck.xyz. Right now we're effectively doing a wait list, but we're going to be letting in early testers. So if you're really into memes and you really want to become the AI powered meme lord that you could be, definitely go join the wait list and either DM the account, DM Meme Deck app, or post, I think we're asking you to post your best meme on our Twitter. And if you do that, we can we'll reach out and get some early testers in to play around. But it's going to be a lot of fun. We have a lot of cool features that are upcoming as well, in terms of the specific meme deck, meme diffusion feature. So, I think AI powered memes and AI generated memes curated by humans is going to be, an exciting new sort of era for online memes. We're sort of seeing it on Twitter a little bit, but these are people that are just kind of doing bespoke, they're setting up their local, comfy UI instances to do these. But we're actually building it into a more broad Stable Diffusion training set. So it's going to be quite powerful. So please sign up, jump in, and we're looking for early testers. So that's pretty much all.
All right. Thanks very much. I'll just remind everybody that we'll put our links to our documentation and the Discord. You can join us and hang out with the developers, ask questions, get support there. That will be as a reply to this space, so you can find all the links there. I'll put the links to Meme Deck stuff there as well. So, Trent, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you to Bazil and to Doria as usual, but thanks very much for joining us this week.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, thanks for joining, guys.
Yeah, thanks so much. Later, everybody.
All right, later. Until next week.